I want you to imagine just for a second your normal morning routine. You wake up, maybe you stumble into the kitchen to make a pot of coffee.
Right.
Then you head to the bathroom to take a shower. All right. You turn the handle and water just flows.
It's basically magic to most people.
It really is. It's this entire like universe of engineering that is completely invisible to you. I mean, the underground pipe networks, the multi-stage chemical treatment plants, these massive high-pressure pumping stations.
Yeah, nobody thinks about it.
Exactly. You don't think about a single piece of that infrastructure until the exact moment it breaks. Like when you turn that tap and nothing comes out, suddenly that invisible machine is literally the only thing in the world that matters.
It really is the ultimate invisible necessity.
Yeah.
I mean, we construct our entire lives, our neighborhood grids, our global economies around this fundamental, unshakable assumption that the water will just, always be there, waiting right behind the valve.
But for millions of people, especially right now, that assumption is rapidly breaking down. We are looking at a really accelerating crisis, particularly when we examine the data coming out of the African continent.
Yeah, the numbers are pretty staggering.
They really are. Across Africa, the demand for reliable water is just skyrocketing at this unprecedented rate. You have rapid urbanization, cities are just exploding in population.
Right. And you layer on top of that these severe climate shifts.
Exactly, making historical weather patterns completely unpredictable. And then underneath all of this, you have aging 20th century piping and grid systems that, I mean, they simply were never engineered to handle 21st century capacity.
And the local governments that are responsible for maintaining and expanding those utility systems, they're hitting a massive structural wall.
A financial wall, right.
Yeah, specifically a wall of severe fiscal constraints. Because think about it. It takes a monumental amount of upfront capital to tear up streets, to lay new pipes, or to build modern, seismically sound treatment plants.
And most local budgets just don't have that.
Right. Public municipal budgets in a lot of these regions are stretched incredibly thin. They simply do not have the taxpayer base or even the borrowing power to finance this enormous infrastructure gap alone.
Which brings us to the mission for today's deep dive. We have this brilliant piece of analysis to look at today. It's an article titled Thirst for Progress, and it takes a hard look at the future of African water infrastructure.
It's a great breakdown of the situation.
It really is. So we're going to explore how public-private partnerships, or PPPs, are basically stepping into the void to solve this massive crisis. It's all about blending public accountability with like private sector muscle.
Yes, which is a tricky balance.
Okay, let's unpack this because I know exactly what you're thinking. The moment we say private sector and water in the same sentence, the immediate visceral assumption is that a government is, selling off the public's drinking water to a massive corporation.
Oh, absolutely.
It sounds like straight up privatization, which understandably makes a lot of people incredibly nervous.
And look, that nervousness is completely historically justified, right? Given how critical water is to basic human survival. But we have to be incredibly precise with our definitions here. The public-private partnerships we are analyzing today are not privatization.
Wait, really? So the
Yeah.
corporation doesn't actually own the water?
They do not know.
Yeah.
In a true privatization scenario, the government is fully liquidating the asset. So the private company buys the reservoir, they own the pumping stations, they own the pipes in the ground.
Right, they own the whole thing.
Exactly. But in a PPP, the government retains 100% ownership of the physical infrastructure. They keep the keys to the kingdom.
Oh, interesting. So what exactly is the private company doing then?
What the public authority is doing is entering into a really highly structured, legally binding agreement. So a specialized private entity steps in to share the burden of delivering the service.
Okay, I see.
Yeah, the government maintains strict regulatory oversight and ownership, but they are essentially importing private expertise to operate, maintain, or finance parts of the system. It's a strategic collaboration. It is not a fire sale.
Okay, let me make sure I have this straight. The government is essentially saying, we own this vintage car. We decide exactly which roads it's allowed to drive on, but we are hiring a really specialized high-tech mechanic to upgrade the engine, swap out the transmission, and guarantee it runs smoothly.
That is a highly accurate way to look at it, yes. And governments take this route because they recognize a really hard truth. They desperately need the rapid innovation, the proactive long-term planning, and frankly, the massive investment capital that the private sector has just built to mobilize.
Okay, so let's get into the actual mechanics of how this plays out, because the analysis details a few different ways these partnerships are structured, depending on what a city actually needs.
Right, the toolkit, essentially.
Yeah, the toolkit. So let's start with what has to be the most agonizing problem for a water utility, which is leakage and lost revenue. Like, a city might have a functioning water plant, but the pipes are cracking, people are tapping into the lines illegally, and the billing department is just a mess.
Right. The industry term for this is non-revenue water.
Yeah.
And it is a catastrophic issue.
Because they're basically just throwing money away.
Exactly. You have a public utility spending millions of dollars to treat and pump clean water, but 40, sometimes even 50% of it just vanishes.
Well, 50%.
Yes. It either physically leaks out of shattered pipes under the streets, or it's consumed by users who simply never get billed because the municipality's accounting software is, you know, decades out of date.
And I imagine there's a huge political element there, too. Like, it's really hard for a local politician to send aggressive debt collectors after their own voters for unpaid water bills.
Oh, that political friction is a massive bottleneck.
Yeah.
And it's exactly why municipalities turn to what's called a lease or affirm contract.
An affirmage contract. Okay.
Yes. And this is hugely popular in West Africa right now. Under an affirmage model, the government still pays for the big, heavy capital investments, like, say, building a new reservoir.
Right.
But they bring in a private partner to run the daily operations and, crucially, to take over the revenue collection.
Ah, so they outsource the bad cop part.
Basically, yeah. The private company installs commercial-grade auditing software, modernizes the billing, and takes on the commercial risk of actually collecting the fees.
Because a private company doesn't have to worry about winning the next mayoral election.
Exactly.
They are just financially incentivized to collect the revenue efficiently and fairly.
Precisely. And they also bring in the technology to hunt down those physical leaks we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
If you want a perfect real-world example of this, look at the data coming out of Senegal.
Oh, right. The Senegal case study.
Yeah. It's widely recognized as one of the continent's most profound water partnership success stories. They utilize this exact affirmage model. You had SONES, which is the state-owned holding company that kept ownership of all the physical assets.
So they kept the vintage car.
Right, they kept the car. And they partnered with SDE, which is a private utility operator.
And SDE's mandate was basically to just stop the bleeding, right?
Yes. And they completely revolutionized the delivery system. By bringing in private sector management specifically for the operations and the billing, SDE dramatically improved the financial health of the grid.
Wow. Just by fixing the leaks and the billing?
Yeah. They introduced systematic leak detection programs to fix the broken pipes, and they totally overhauled the billing process. And because they massively reduced the amount of water and money being lost to the ether, the network actually had the financial health to expand water access deep into previously unserved urban areas.
That's incredible.
It really is.
Mm-hmm.
The public sector never lost ownership, but that private operational efficiency completely turned the whole system around.
Okay, so that solves the problem if you already have pipes and plants, but they're just, you know, bleeding money. But what if a region is facing a massive population boom and they don't even have a treatment plant to begin with?
Right, a totally different challenge.
Yeah, because fixing the billing software doesn't matter if there's literally no water to bill for. Building a massive new bulk water supply requires hundreds of millions of dollars that these municipalities simply do not have.
That is where you bring out the heavy artillery of PPPs. It's called the Build Operate Transfer Model, commonly known as a BOT.
A BOT.
Okay.
How does that work?
In this structure, the private entity actually finances the new project themselves. They bring their own capital, they design the massive treatment plant, they build it from the ground up, and then they operate it for a fixed period.
Okay.
And then, at the end of that contract, they transfer full ownership of the fully functioning plant back to the government.
Wait, I have to stop you there. Because I read that part of the source material and I immediately hit a logical wall.
Okay, what's the hang up?
Well, a private infrastructure company is going to spend, say, $100 million of their own capital to build a massive facility, operate it for a little while, and then just hand the keys over to the government for free. What on earth is the incentive there? That makes no business sense.
What's fascinating here is how the financial timeline and the tariff structures are designed to perfectly balance the risk and the reward. Because you're right, the private company isn't operating a charity.
Definitely not.
So that fixed period of operation we were talking about, it isn't just 3 or 4 years. It is usually measured in decades, typically 20 to 30 years.
Ah, okay. Yeah. So they have a very long runway.
A very long, legally protected runway.
Yeah.
During those 2 or 3 decades, they are operating the plant and producing millions of gallons of bulk water. The government utility acts as a guaranteed offtaker.
Meaning they have to buy it.
Exactly. They sign an ironclad agreement to purchase that water at a predetermined regulated rate. So over the course of 30 years, the private company slowly recoups its massive initial capital investment, covers its daily operating costs, and makes a reasonable, carefully modeled profit margin.
Wow. Okay. So it's essentially a massive mortgage that the utility pays off by buying the water over time.
Yeah.
And then by year 30, the math plays out, the debt is cleared, and the public gets a multi-million dollar asset free and clear.
That's exactly the mechanism. It is a brilliant financial blueprint to mobilize private capital, to build critical infrastructure today, rather than waiting 30 years for a government to save up the tax revenue to build it themselves.
Because the people need the water today.
Precisely. And we see this beautifully executed in Ghana, specifically with the Crepong water treatment plant.
Yeah, I was actually looking at that case study. They use this exact build, operate, transfer framework to vastly expand the water supply system for that whole region.
They did. The private partner brought in the capital to finance the massive expansion. They managed the really complex construction and handled the operations. Because they could access that private capital up front, they bypassed all the usual bureaucratic funding bottlenecks.
Right.
And the result? Over 500,000 residents gained reliable, improved water access, and it vastly enhanced the entire region's resilience against severe droughts.
So we have Affirmage for operations and BOT for building brand new plants.
Correct.
But what if an entire city network needs to be ripped up, expanded, and completely modernized all at once? Like the operations, the old pipes, the new plants, just everything.
Then you are looking at a concession model. This is the most comprehensive and, frankly, the most complex structure of them all. In a concession, the private partner takes on both the daily operations of the entire grid and the major capital investment obligations for network expansion.
Wow.
Yeah, they're basically managing the whole chessboard.
That feels incredibly risky for a municipality.
Yeah.
I mean, you are handing the operational control and the future expansion of your city's lifeblood over to a single private entity.
It is risky.
Right. How do you prevent them from just jacking up the water rates to fund those expansions, effectively pricing out the poorest citizens?
That is the pivotal challenge.
Yeah.
And it's exactly why concessions require an incredibly powerful, independent public regulator. The private company might be managing the chessboard, but the government regulator sets the rules of the game. The regulator dictates the maximum tariffs the company can charge. They mandate the specific quality standards of the water. And they set hard deadlines for when certain neighborhoods absolutely must be connected to the grid.
And if they miss those deadlines?
If the private company fails to hit those metrics, they face devastating financial penalties, or they can even lose the contract entirely.
So it's a tightrope walk. You have to give the private company enough freedom to innovate, but you have to keep them on a tight enough leash to protect the consumer.
Exactly. And we actually see this critical role of regulation playing out dynamically in Kenya.
Okay, let's talk about Kenya.
What's interesting about the Kenyan approach is that they aren't just focusing on massive urban mega projects. They are increasingly adopting these private partnerships at the decentralized county level.
Really? To do what?
To improve the management of rural boreholes, to install smart meters, and to expand local networks.
But wait, if you have dozens of different county-level partnerships running around, how do you prevent chaos? How do you ensure the quality is actually standardized across the whole country?
That is where their National Regulatory Board, known as WASREB, steps in. WASREB stands for the Water Services Regulatory Board.
Got it.
Their aggressive oversight is essentially the glue holding it all together. They help standardize the service levels and the tariff structures across all these scattered, decentralized county projects.
So they're the ones holding the leash.
Exactly. It proves that no matter how small or large the private partnership is, the mechanism only succeeds if you have a strong public watchdog ensuring sustainability and protecting the end user.
Now, we've talked a lot about the financial models and the actual contracts, but I really want to pivot to what this actually looks like on the ground.
Yeah, the real world impact.
Exactly. When one of these partnerships is functioning perfectly, how does a PPP actively change the water running through the pipes in a city? Because looking at the research, it's not just about doing the same old things with different money, it's about a massive leap in efficiency.
That's the real paradigm shift here. When a private partner takes over operations, they aren't bound by the legacy systems a municipality might have been using since, the 1980s.
Right.
They immediately introduce modern technology. We are talking about acoustic sensors on pipes to listen for microscopic pressure drops and a total shift to digital metering.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because the analogy that comes to mind for me is automotive.
Okay, how so?
While the old way a municipality ran a water grid was basically like driving a car and waiting for the engine to literally start smoking on the highway before you realize there's a problem, a pipe bursts, a street floods, and you send a crew out to patch it up.
Right, very reactive.
But shifting to digital metering and smart sensors, it's like having an advanced dashboard computer that tells you exactly which valve is experiencing abnormal pressure, like 3 weeks before you even take a road trip.
That is exactly the behavioral shift these technologies create. Private operators utilize these digital dashboards to find those hidden leaks and stop those catastrophic losses way before they happen. They are legally mandated by their contracts to maintain the physical assets to a very specific high standard.
So they can't just slap a literal band-aid on a bursting pipe.
No, absolutely not, because they are financially on the hook for the long-term performance.
Ah, I see.
Yeah, it forces a shift from reactive emergency fixes to proactive long-term asset management. The private company is heavily incentivized to install high-quality, durable parts today so they don't have their profit margins wiped out by having to replace cheap parts tomorrow.
Which also translates to speed, right? I noticed in the deep dive sources that public procurement and city construction can take years just to get off the ground. But private operators are bound by strict timeline penalties in their contracts.
Yes.
They are highly motivated to get the infrastructure built and get the water flowing right on schedule.
And that actually leads to an often overlooked application of these models, which we see playing out in South Africa,
Okay.
because we tend to focus entirely on clean drinking water, right?
Yeah.
But South Africa has utilized PPPs specifically to upgrade aging wastewater treatment facilities
Right.
and to create massive industrial water reuse systems.
No, wastewater isn't exactly the most glamorous infrastructure project. I imagine it's a lot harder to get a private company to fund that compared to a clean drinking water plant.
It is, yeah, which is why South Africa brilliantly employed what we call hybrid or blended models.
What does that mean?
Well, the risk for a private company to completely finance a wastewater plant might be way too high in a volatile market. So they brought in the Development Bank of Southern Africa.
Ah, a development bank.
Exactly. The bank provided targeted financial guarantees and sector-specific grants that essentially absorb some of that initial risk.
Oh, so it sweetens the deal to make a difficult project actually bankable.
Precisely. That blending of development finance with private sector operational efficiency allowed municipalities to expand their capacity to treat toxic waste, vastly improve their environmental compliance, and significantly reduce raw pollution flowing into local waterways.
That's huge.
It is. It demonstrates that these partnerships are vital, not just for getting clean water to a population, but for safely managing the ecological fallout after the water has been used.
When you lay all of this out, I mean, the digital meters, the massive BOT funding, the wastewater management, it becomes pretty clear that we aren't just talking about a utility here.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, reliable water is the foundational bedrock of a functioning modern society. Yes, improving public health outcomes and lowering waterborne disease rates is paramount, of
Yeah.
course. But beyond that, water dictates the economic reality of a region. It stabilizes local agriculture, allowing farmers to yield predictable crops regardless of unpredictable rains.
Right.
And it allows massive industries, textile mills, and factories to operate without sudden crippling shutdowns.
Right. Like, if a multinational corporation is looking to invest hundreds of millions to build a new manufacturing plant in a growing African city, the very first question they ask isn't about tax breaks.
No, it's not.
They ask, is the power grid stable and is the water supply reliable? Because a factory literally cannot function without it.
Exactly. A well-designed, strictly regulated PPP doesn't just fix broken pipes. It underpins the entire economic ecosystem of a nation, giving both foreign and domestic investors the actual confidence to build.
When you pull all these threads together, a very clear, unavoidable picture emerges. The water infrastructure challenges facing the African continent are
We
immense.
really are.
They are a collision of climate change, exploding populations, and historical underfunding. Slapping temporary fixes on 100-year-old pipes just isn't going to cut it anymore.
No.
These challenges require incredibly long-term, highly collaborative solutions. And it is abundantly clear from the data that well-structured public-private partnerships represent a strategic, vital pathway to a secure water future.
Absolutely.
They aren't about governments selling out their citizens. They are about combining rigorous public oversight with private sector innovation and capital. Whether you are a business leader looking to invest in emerging markets, an urban planner trying to design a resilient city grid, or just someone trying to understand how our fundamental global resources will survive a changing climate, understanding the mechanics of these partnerships is absolutely vital knowledge.
Completely agree.
So what does this all mean?
This raises an important question. If we can successfully use this exact architecture retaining strict public ownership and regulation while outsourcing the massive capital requirements and operational efficiency to the private sector to save something as fundamentally essential and politically sensitive as a continent's water supply, could this exact blueprint be the ultimate solution for fixing other collapsing global infrastructure? Think about the aging, fragile power grids rolling out blackouts across the developed world right now, or the overwhelmed public healthcare systems that governments everywhere simply can no longer afford to modernize.
Oh, wow. That's a fascinating point.
Right. If this collaborative model works for the most vital resource on Earth, maybe it's the exact key we need to keep the rest of our invisible infrastructure alive.
Because tomorrow morning, when you wake up and blindly turn that tap, the clean water flowing out is the result of a massive hidden machine. And keeping that machine running for the next century is going to require more than just new pipes. It's going to require partnerships.